been an action-packed week in the Leeds Ice Hockey League, and you're going to hear it all here on A View from the Bridge, Episode 6 for the 24th of November, 2005.
The other way, skidding left to right in the second period. Jason Ruff, terrific move by Jason Ruff to Courtney! Oh, what a fabulous move by Jason Ruff in the left circle. He just undressed the Sheffield Steelers defenseman. That was number 19, Rod Sarridge, at the blue line. He fired the puck in front through the left circle, and there was Courtney with that long reach, getting his stick on the puck, and it's the Giants who lead by 4-0.
Out to Ed Courtney, who, well, the puck bobbled there, but it deceived the Sheffield player more than it did Courtney. Now here's Kelman to Courtney, and there's the hat trick for Ed Courtney. As easy as that, the Giants, a quick rush up ice, took Kelman on the left wing boards, took the zone. He saw Courtney cut to the front of the net. Courtney just tipped it past Davy Lawrence. A hat-trick for Ed Courtney, who only flew back into the country this morning after visiting his family and friends. And he's pulled off a hat-trick already tonight. It's the Giants 5, Steelers nothing.
Hello, I'm Patrick Smith, and with me as always is Aaron Kernan. How are you doing, Aaron?
Not too bad, Paddy. I'm a bit knackered after all the goings on this week.
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on this week. Very special show as well, our first interview. We'll give you a quick running order of what's going on in the show. As always, we'll have a review of the week's matches, the game against the Steelers at home last Sunday night. We're going to be looking around the league. Now, it's very special. We're going to be talking to Rick Strang from the London Racers. He's going to tell us all the goings on in London this week. As well as a few other bits and pieces from Sheffield and, of course, from Newcastle. We'll be looking forward to the upcoming games, again against Sheffield, and a rescheduled game against the Basingstoke Bison. We may even have time for a G-Crew review. If you want to get in contact with the show, of course, as always, you can contact us at podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com. You can call us on 0141 416 1296, or you can look at our website, kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast. So let's waste no time and get stuck in. Steelers arrived on Sunday night after a bit of action in the Steelers camp. Didn't they, Aaron?
They did indeed, yes. Always nice to see the Steelers over with a good big away crowd again. They were in a bit of disarray this week, though. Paul Heavey left employment with the Steelers and left Ron Shudra and Mike Perron running the bench, which was a bit of a shock. Didn't really seem to come out of anywhere, and the Steelers had just really, you know, got on quite a good run and been picking up a few wins, but it was a bit of a bolt out of the blue.
Was it mutually agreed to end the contract?
It was, yeah.
A bit like Roy Keane?
Yes, a bit like it. Obviously on a much bigger level, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it seemed to be something to do with a clause in his contract. I haven't really read, you know, a lot about it, but it seemed to be that they couldn't quite come to a definite agreement on a certain clause, and they decided that the best thing to do would be to part ways.
High scoring game, 5-0 at home, and with Coach Courtney leading the way again, he's flying high. He got a hat trick in this game.
He did indeed. Another well worked hat trick, some good goals in there. Some great setup play again by Jason Ruff, who had probably his best game in a good while. Played very, very well. Again, the Steelers, in comparison to whenever we were over in Sheffield a few weeks ago, I think the Steelers were even worse. They didn't really put up any fight. You know, we could have had a lot more, really, than five, to be perfectly honest. The Steelers, I don't think, looked like scoring at all, which obviously they didn't. Mike Menard picked up a second consecutive shutout.
Not bad for a guy coming back from injury.
No, he's taken a couple of weeks, I think, just to get over that and just to get back to sort of, you know, the full range of motion. It was a knee injury he had, so I don't know whether that had maybe been restricting him a bit. But he certainly looked good. Neither of the shutouts has been, you know, has been what you call a difficult shutout. 24 shots and 23 shots in both games, but not really any. Well, he did make one big save against Sheffield. But, you know, that was pretty much, you know, it. They were fairly easy shutouts for him. But he still has to be there and get in the right position to make the saves and to pick the shutout up.
Mm-hmm. The Sheffield team are without passion. Something we're going to talk about later is the input of the new coaches, which we'll not talk about now. But it's sad to see that the Sheffield are in this position, that haven't been such a strong team for so many years, and hopefully they can get past it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's still early in the season, and you know, looking at the table, you know, they still could find themselves up in the mix, depending on, you know, on any run they may get on, at, you know, fairly soon. But again, that's something we'll maybe look at a bit later on once we have a look at the, you know, how the table's looking at the minute. Mm-hmm.
Of course, we'll be playing the Steelers again this Sunday in Sheffield, but we'll talk about that later on in the show. As I say, it's an action-packed show from an action-packed week, and it's time that we talk about what's going on around the league. And some sad news came from London. The London Racers, as you may have heard, had to cease operations. The press release came from London. A couple of sections I'll read to you. It's, whilst in some respects the decision we have taken is a very difficult one, ultimately it is the only decision available to us. It has become clear that the Lee Valley Regional Park Authority, through the Lee Valley Ice Centre, are unable to provide a suitably safe venue for elite-level ice hockey. The club, its investors and sponsors are simply unwilling to put commercial interests before that of the safety of players and fans. The decision taken at the Racers board meeting this afternoon was therefore an inevitable one. It is with deep regret and with a heavy heart that the board of the London Racers Ice Hockey Club and sponsors, in conjunction with the Ice Hockey League, the Elite Ice Hockey League, excuse me, announced that the Capital's top flight ice hockey team will cease operations for the 2005-2006 season with immediate effect. Sad news, Anne.
Very sad news. It seemed pretty much inevitable from the end of last week on, and although we only got the statement on Monday and there were sort of fairly strong hints on Sunday night in Cardiff, you know, it was still a bit hard to believe, and something that's very, you know, it's hard to take, really. London were well liked around the league. They were a team, you know, that a lot of people had a lot of time for, and always sort of, you know, London, they were a very open side. You know, you always knew where you stood with them. Financially, they seemed to be pretty solid, and it's just a shame that it's basically come down to not having somewhere to play, especially in London, you know, the capital city of England, where you'd expect maybe there to be better facilities and so on.
As we'll hear from the interview of Rick Strang that's coming up, there are a couple of things that really forced him into this position in the games against the Blaze and the games against the Steelers, forcing safety issues. And of course, today the Ice Hockey Players Association also came out with a statement. But everybody seems to have their own wee bit and piece to say about this situation. But all in all, it just comes down to the fact that it is sad that we have to lose the Racers so early.
Yeah, especially when they seem to be, you know, a lot more competitive. We've seen them grow over the last few seasons. You know, that it, quite frankly, a terrible first season.
Yeah, it was terrible, wasn't it? They didn't get off to a very good start.
Yeah, and they just seemed to get stuck in a rut in that first season, and it took them a long time to start picking up the points. Then last season, you know, they seemed to be a bit more competitive. They were picking up wins here and there. And certainly, you know, we're a strong mid-table side and even had a good chance in the playoffs of making the Final Four. And then this season, you know, again, they'd made another step up. And we're, you know, we're challenging, we're causing some upsets, well, maybe not upsets, because we came to expect them. You know, they beat ourselves for the first time, the one in Cardiff for the first time, which unfortunately turned out to be their final game, you know, and so they seem to be sort of taking, you know, a step in the right direction every season.
What we're going to do now is we're very lucky to be able to speak with Rick Strang from the London Racers, and he spoke to us earlier today.
Hi Rick, thanks for joining us.
Hi Pop.
Just to start off with, most people probably have seen the statement by now, but could you just explain again for us the problems you were having and what's led to the decision to suspend operations?
Yeah, we've been having some trouble for a time with the rink, but we thought that they were issues that we could deal with or compensate for. But sort of two episodes recently kind of refocused us and made us reassess that judgment. First of all, Blaz Emesic, the Panthers forward, suffered a nasty injury after striking the boards, which we think, we're not sure, but we think was due to something sticking out of the boards. And that's currently being investigated, so I can't say too much about it directly, but it's being investigated, and he's put in a formal complaint about the state of the rink and suggesting that the rink was a cause for his injury. I'm the medical officer with the Racers, and I can confirm that he required two internal sutures and eight external ones on quite a nasty laceration to his face.
That's bad.
It was pretty bad. And anybody who was there that night was quite upset. It was a deep cut, and there was literally a pool of blood on the ice. We needed the Zamboni to come out and do several cuts to clear it. It was pretty nasty.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that. That was followed sort of a few games later in the Sheffield game by a puck being struck by, I think it was Warren Tate, actually, from the blue line, and it hit the glass behind the net. Now, you know, glass breaks all the time in hockey. It's one of those things, but the specific glass that's supposed to be used actually collapses down into small pieces and therefore doesn't do anybody any real damage. But when the glass was struck, it actually exploded, shattered explosively, and sent shards of glass quite considerable distances into the crowd and across the ice. And our lady, who was working as a goal judge at the time, suffered a cut to the top of her thigh. Bearing in mind she was wearing a pair of jeans, and that's pretty tough material, I'd suggest. The fact that it went through jeans and cut her was something that concerned us. The glass was replaced, however, in practice, a day or so later, that same piece of glass shattered in exactly the same manner. And at that point, we discussed it with the players. Myself, I contributed to the discussion, and also the owners, and we felt that it was simply not safe to continue asking people to come to our rink and play hockey and asking people to come to our rink and watch hockey. And therefore, we looked at various options of how we could provide hockey elsewhere away from the rink, and there were none that were viable. And so what we were left with ultimately was the fact that we couldn't continue to play hockey in London.
I'll say we're pretty disappointed to hear that. What other options did you look at? Did you try and find ice time elsewhere?
Well, there is nowhere else suitable in London. Let's be clear about that. And in essence, that's quite an important point when you bear in mind it's the capital city, population of, I think it's around 4 million, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly around inner London, greater London. And it's unable to provide an ice pad suitable to play hockey. Notwithstanding that, we did look at the possibility of perhaps playing our games on the road, or perhaps getting ice time at another rink. You know, perhaps we could share with Basingstoke, or could we share with Cardiff and things like that. But ultimately, none of those things are viable. It's just impossible. Not only do ice pads, you know, they're few and far between, and they're fully booked up with everything. So in order to go anywhere, you'd have to displace somebody, which is never easy to do. But on top of that, you know, we're a fully professional team. We practice every day. We need ice time every single day. And in effect, we'd have to move lock, stock and barrel to wherever, you know, we found the ice time. It just wasn't possible. And in terms of having a team that could be supported by fans paying their money to come and watch us, again, we just can't do that anywhere else other than, you know, in our home rink. It's just not viable to try and do it elsewhere. So really, sad as it is, we were left with the only solution, which was to cease its operations.
A lot of questions were asked about maybe a return to Alexandra Palace.
Alexandra Palace is just not suitable for that level of hockey. It really isn't. The ice there is very poor. And in terms of the rink having the infrastructure to support it, it's just not there. It would need a considerable amount of money to be spent on it. Bear in mind, it has no plexi at all. It has a completely netting surround,
mm-hmm.
which in itself is problematic. So. And we actually left Alexandra Palace to come to the Lee Valley.
Mm-hmm.
I say we saw the sorrow on the faces of all the staff and the players last weekend in the photographs. Tony Boots, great photographs. But over the last few years, there must have been some great moments and memories. What are your favourites?
My favourites? I think beating Cardiff Devils for our first ever win. It had taken us something like 30 games, and Cardiff came to our rink, and we eventually won, and we won 3-0. That was a heck of a moment. I think actually our first ever game when we actually took to the ice. We'd put a hockey team together in 6 weeks and from scratch. And when that team first hit the ice and just actually played the first game, the result was immaterial, really, the fact that we'd actually got there. And I think obviously one has to say, you know, that final game as well against Cardiff was it was a real thing. It was something, you know, I think, as you say, by the looks of the faces on the players and everybody there, you knew it was something that meant something. You know, I've not cried since I was a kid. And you know, I just couldn't stop myself. It just meant so much. And the people of Cardiff were absolutely unbelievable in terms of facilitating our last game, helping us put on the game, and ensuring that we were looked after. And the fans were just incredible. I've got, you know, video of the last couple of minutes where the entire rink was on its feet chanting London Races, you know, Cardiff fans and everybody. And that's a pretty moving moment, I think.
Mm-hmm. Did see from the photographs, it did seem very emotional.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it is, because it's people need to understand how much it takes to get a hockey team going. You know, I'm not putting fans down at all, but the simple part is to just come and watch the game. You know, you just pay your money, you sit down, you watch the game, you go home. You know, 2-3 hours before the game starts, there are people working really hard to get that game on. And once you've gone home, there'll be people there for another 2-3 hours after the game, you know, shutting everything down and getting organised. That kind of thing happens every day with practice, with arranging players' salaries, with sorting out housing, cars, helping players with their medical stuff. I mean, it's just an ongoing thing, day after day after day, chasing sponsors. Running a hockey team in this country is very, very hard. And based on the fact that many of the racers' positions, you know, within the team were voluntary positions, because we didn't have much money to put around. If you're looking at someone like Tony Boot, the photographer, you know, he does 40 hours at work in his normal job, and then he does another 30 hours every week doing photos and getting those up on the website.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a lot of dedication, a lot of hard work. Mm-hmm. So, in a very strange way, there was a kind of relief there, I guess, a kind of release of tension. You know, we'd all worked so hard, and although we're really sad to lose it, there was kind of a feeling of, you know, you just kind of sigh and you think, oh, you know, you can get perhaps your life back for a little bit and get yourself centred and organised again.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. So, standing on that, what are your thoughts for the future, Rick? What are the options? Have you looked for a site for a new rink?
Yeah, I think in terms of the London Racers, I think, you know, Roger Black is a very driven individual. He's very clever and he's an intelligent chap, and he's working very, very hard to bring hockey back to the capital. He's very passionate about the game. He plays the game. He loves the game. And, I know it's commercially sensitive, so I can't reveal it, you know, on here, but I know that we have at least two options for getting our own rink into the capital, you know, in the next year or 2 years. So, you know, that's positive, I think, there. From a personal perspective, I struggle a little bit with the way that there are campaigns about keeping names alive or keeping teams alive. Mm-hmm. And I think from a personal perspective, I see the London Racers as an entity in itself that's been and come and gone, and in that regard is kind of finished. And I think, you know, personally, I'd like to see something new mm-hmm. come out of this. I'm not sure that resurrecting the Racers or trying to keep the Racers name alive, you know, with a handful of Hardy fans wearing Racers jerseys and going around everybody else's rinks, I'm not sure how helpful that is. What I'm absolutely certain of, though, is that there are people that believe that is the right way to go, and
mm-hmm.
they are dedicated people who work very, very hard, you know, as fans and as volunteers, and I'm not taking that away from them for 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
So I've no idea what the new team will be called. I've no idea whether there definitely will be a new team. I do know that there are a lot of individuals who are set to try and deliver it, Roger Black being one of them, and our fans amongst them. So I guess it's kind of wait and see.
You would like to be based in London again, or?
Yes. Yeah. You know, people hate this because they see us as kind of London-centric, but if you have a national top-level league, then the capital city of the country in which that league is set up should have a team in that league. It gives it credibility. Now, I know people will argue till the day is done that that's nonsense and, you know, a load of rubbish, and that's fine, they're entitled to that opinion, but I absolutely know from experience from the inside that having the word London in front of your team, whatever that team is, and having London in your league attracts people to that league. And I know that from our dealings with sponsors, and I know that with our dealings with the NHL, our dealings with foreign leagues and people like that. You know, I'm not putting down for 1 second the fact that people live in Basingstoke or Guildford or Fife or any of those things. But when you're trying to develop a national product, a national league at the top level, you need your capital cities, you know, in there. It gives it credibility. And so I'm not saying it should be us, but what I'm saying is someone needs to have a team from London in the top league, and I sincerely believe that.
There was always the talk, Rick, about, when the London Knights were with, that there would be a move to the Millennium Dome, or the O2 as it's called now. And with the redevelopment for London 2012, do you know of any sort of aims towards maybe a move?
Not acutely. I, news filters out from the London Knights are a very, very different organisation from us, in as much as they're run by AEG, which is this huge multinational company. Mm-hmm. And so in that regard, it's a pretty faceless organisation. It's very hard to get information. It's very hard to know what's happening. Whereas we were kind of like a small, you know, they were like a huge superstore, and we were like a little family corner shop or the corner post office or something. You know, we're happy to chat about our business, and we know all our customers, kind of thing. I think AEG seem to have an interest in hockey. I think that's clear, but I'm not sure that they've fully understood how they want to deliver hockey in the UK. Mm-hmm. I think there are moves to bring the World Championships here at some point. I think there are moves around perhaps having some kind of NHL link up here at some point. And those kind of large projects would suit AEG and what they plan. In terms of actually AEG putting a team into the new O2 Arena, on a personal level, I can't imagine that they would do that. However, we keep hearing rumours from people who say that they know that actually that is their intention, and that 2007 or 2008 or 2009, the London Knights will return, you know, led by AEG, financed by AEG. I really don't know. I'm just doubtful.
Yeah, it would be a massive arena, and we know like the problems that Manchester had with such a big arena.
Yeah.
Well, London.
I mean, arenas are tough if you don't fill them. You know, arena time costs, you know, around £10,000. You can average £10,000 to have your arena to play a game of hockey in. That's how much it costs. Now, you know, you need to get a lot of fans through the door to pay that £10,000 back, because if you're playing at home once a week, that's £10,000 for the arena. An average elite team costs around £10,000 to £15,000 a week to run. So you're looking at overheads of around £25,000 per week just for your arena and your team before you've done anything else.
Yeah.
And so you've got to be confident that you're going to get the folks through the door. If you take an average ticket price after tax and all things like that of £10, then, you know, to get your £25,000, you're going to have to get, you know, was it 2,500 fans? You're going to have to guarantee 2,500 fans come through your door every time. Mm-hmm. Now, there aren't many teams in the UK that are doing that. Not many at all. So it's tough. And you know, London's already been through this with Docklands. Docklands was placed in a great place. It had good access links. It was a lovely arena. AEG had to give away free tickets week in, week out. And in fact, when we did our research for the London races, we discovered that as little, you know, in a crowd of 4,000 people, as little as 1,000 of them had actually paid to get in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's
not really financially viable, really, is it?
I'm not sure it is. I really think the Coventry are the model for this country. I genuinely believe that. I think a rink of around 3,500, maybe 4,000 max, and those rinks situated, you know, in city centres or as near as possible with good transport links, I think that's the way forward. And I think, you know, you can fill rinks like that. Even better if the rink is owned by the team itself, because that's important in terms of developing food and beverage sales, merchandising sales, and ensuring all of that income from things like public skate comes back to the team and supports the team that you have playing out that rink. And certainly that's the model that we'll be adopting, you know, if we manage to get a site in London and get our own arena up.
You're not biased towards the racers anymore. Have you any thoughts on who may finish on top this season?
I think that Sheffield Steelers might do it.
You think that Wiss and Maxi will make a big difference?
Yeah, I think they will. I think they'll turn it around. I think they'll get something going there, and with the momentum, it'll carry through. What I will say, though, is the most exciting thing about this league this year is that you could pick four or five teams, probably, and you'd be right with it, whichever one you picked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think there's going to be a runaway winner this year. I think it's going to be very, very tight, and that's evidenced out so far, you know, when you start to average out. I know Giants are doing particularly well at the moment, and, you know, they've got a devastating side. I mean, we played them, and, you know, their first line comes out, and they kill you, and then the second line comes out, and it's as good as the first one. And you're like, oh, my gosh, you know, how long can this keep going? But yeah, I just get a sense that, that Sheffield might do it. And I think the telling thing for Belfast will be their games on the road, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of course, when Belfast travelled down to yourselves for the first game, they were they took a beating.
Yeah, 4-2, but you were short of guys then.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're short guys, and obviously the Theo factor hadn't kicked in either. So, you know, I'm not sure that result necessarily reflects things, although I think it's tough for you guys to travel. I just think it is tough for you guys to travel, so, and I think that might be a factor in the end. Having said that, you've got points in the bag. You know, I know you've got games, you know, you've played more games, but mm-hmm. the games you've played, you've won. And so, you know, it might be enough. But I just get a sense that Sheffield's a bit of a sleeping giant. You know, in the past, they've won everything. I mean, they've always been a good team. They've always done well. Morton Lee era kind of came to an end and everything fizzled out, and there was a lot of sort of bad feeling, and he'd kind of seemed to run the place down a little bit. But Bob Phillips has gone in with a real vengeance and started driving things and getting things going, getting people motivated. Their crowds have gone up. Their fans are being spoken to now and involved a lot more than they ever were with Morton Lee. I think there's a new sense of belief around the place. We played them recently, and my feeling about the team was that they were very flat, that they were a very skillful side, but there was just no heart there. They just weren't kind of playing with any conviction. The guys they picked up from us, Dennis Maxwell and Jason Robinson, and then Dave Whistle, they're three guys who wear their hearts on their sleeve. If you ever wanted passion, you know, those are three guys that are going to give you passion. So I think it looks good for them. We'll see. They'll probably get stuffed on Friday, and I'll look like an idiot, but I think they're going to do very well.
Of course, one of the cups is now, since the racers have gone, it's the Nate Leslie Cup. I'm wondering if the Nate Leslie Cup will hold a special place in any future rink.
It probably will. At the moment, it's got a special place in my house on top of my computer. I'll have to take a photo of it and email it across to you. But it's actually sitting here right in front of me now with its little red and white ribbons on. So, you know, I was worried that it might disappear with the office kind of moving and everything happening. So
that's good to know it's still there.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how we can figure out how to play for it now, though.
I think that's baffled people around the league since the start of this season, and certainly at the end of last season. What is the proper way to pronounce your former goaltender's surname?
It's Kedrana.
Kedrana?
Kedrana.
I know
yeah.
that Aaron's had a bit of trouble with that over the last couple of weeks, and I've just left him to try and work it out. So.
Kedrana. We call him Kudzi, though, so.
I think we might go with Kudzi or Ladislav.
And I'm right in saying he's now gone north of the border? Or is that not? Is that speculated?
Yeah, it's speculative. He has got offers elsewhere, and I'm not sure how much is out. But you know, I don't want to give the game away for him and spoil the chance of the contract that he's got. But I think he may well go north of the border. But if people are taking that as firm, then I think they might be getting a little ahead of themselves.
More or less near ready to wrap it up. Just a question myself to ask you, Rick. I'm wondering if you had a buyer for your little box of humility.
We did. A guy from Sheffield bought it.
I thought you were looking for a Belfast buyer.
That was pretty sweet. Yeah, none of you guys bid on it. I was quite upset. I thought we'd get like a tenner or something and put it to charity, but nobody bid on it. I think I got really worried, actually, because I went to the Kingdom of the Giants, and I suddenly thought, my God, some people are like taking this seriously, and they're thinking that I'm... You know, having a real gig or whatever. It was supposed to be just a bit of fun. I thought it was one of those crazy things that people would, you know, switch on to and have a laugh with. But some people took it very, very seriously indeed. I was surprised.
I wouldn't worry too much about that, Rick, to be honest.
It actually raised a lot of laughs, though, I think. And probably they were all outside of Belfast, but it did raise a lot of laughs. And I got quite a lot of email traffic on that. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, it shows a good bit of banter between fans, and I know that a lot of fans in Belfast are fully behind you guys in London, and it was sad to hear of the outcome.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things is the fan base in the UK, not just for the races, but for every team, and it's easy to kind of hark on about it in a kind of patronising way and say how lovely it is, but we've had very, very visible evidence of how supportive fans are ever since, you know, events on Sunday. First of all, the Cardiff people, as I already said earlier, were awesome. Since then, my email traffic and the traffic to our supporters club has just been filled. The other night, Newcastle, for example, they're going to have a couple of bucket collections, and they're getting money together to pay for a coach to bring some London Races fans up to their game against Sheffield, which is huge. Mm-hmm. Basingstoke, you know, the coach down there has said that all our season ticket holders can use their season tickets in Basingstoke to see games free of charge in Basingstoke if they want to go and see games there. Peterborough have come to us and given us an absolute slashed rate price to go and watch games in Peterborough. Romford have said we can go and watch games in Romford at a cut price, and we can set a stall up in Romford to sell merchandise to try and develop some more stuff. There's much more. I wish I could mention them all. I genuinely can't remember them. I'd have to go to my computer. But, you know, so many people have given us so much help. It makes you cry. It makes me cry when I think about it, because people are so caring. And we really, really appreciate that. We really do. It's been immense.
I think we'd both agree with that. You know, we've seen that before, even last season when Newcastle were having their troubles.
Yeah.
And previous times with Manchester as well. Yeah. So.
Yeah,
you know, it's something that we've seen before, and hopefully we'll see again.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks very much, Rick. I think we've I think we've covered everything. Just want to thank you for joining us here on the podcast. You're the first interview, so I think it's went pretty well. So I can't thank you enough. Well, we'd like to thank Rick Strang again for taking the time out to give us that interview, and wish him and the London Racers, or as you hear, whatever the London Racers may become, all the very best for the future. Some very good points made, Aaron.
Yep, some very good ones, and certainly a lot of things there for discussion, and a lot of things of interest, I'm sure, to a lot of people around the country who follow ice hockey.
Yeah, and a lot of players now have said that the London have facilitated moves, and have moved all across the UK ice hockey and beyond. As Rick has said, Jason Robinson and Dennis Maxwell have both moved to Sheffield. Maxie will talk about in a wee bit. Nathan Rempel has gone to Cardiff. He'll certainly strengthen their side.
He's played in Cardiff before, just last season, where he had a fairly successful year. Obviously, he knows the setup around there, and sort of coming in at this stage of the season, probably be a good addition for them.
Mm-hmm. It is sad to see the demise of the London Racers, and especially following the London Knights. As you heard, the London Knights, a totally separate company, organisation to the Racers. But London really does need a top-level ice hockey team, and it needs a top-level ice hockey arena.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. And again, as we heard, there may be plans for that. But, you know, it's hard to tell. And as Rick touched upon, it is important, I think, to have, you know, the London side in the league. One of the points that was made at the start of the season was we now had the four capital cities of the UK mm-hmm. in the league, and unfortunately we've lost that again.
Well, I know that everybody wishes them well for the future. Of course, one of the fallouts from the loss of London is that the Elite League table has had to be restructured, taking London out and reassessing the games in which London have played. The basic form of the league is still the same. Belfast top, Nottingham, Newcastle, Cardiff, Coventry, Sheffield, Basingstoke and Edinburgh. But there have been some changes, Aaron.
There have, yes. I think in some ways... the way, you know, the reorganisation has actually benefited ourselves. Now, if teams below us win all their games in hand, we're still going to be in a position of strength at the top, whereas beforehand there were teams who could have overtaken us. But in some ways it's also benefited Sheffield, as they now are the team maybe most likely to be able to get up there to the top with us.
Mm-hmm. Especially with the events of this week, which we'll talk about in a second. You can never rule out Sheffield, I suppose. Yeah, but of course Nottingham and Newcastle and Cardiff are all pushing in with good challenges.
Yes, I have to say I agree. I think it's a good thing that really there's at the minute there's sort of all but two teams who really are in with a shout and all fairly close together. And as we've seen really this season so far, any team is capable of beating any other team on any given day.
Well, maybe we should talk now about the goings on in Yorkshire.
Yes, some interesting changes there. I think we touched upon the departure of Paul Heavey mm-hmm. already, and I believe they've already replaced him.
Yes, a favourite in Belfast and a favourite from the London team have now combined to try to give Sheffield that push. Dave Whistle, of course, former coach of the Belfast Giants, having won the Ice Hockey Super League with us and the playoffs with us. And of course, he moved on to Cardiff. He's now returned to the UK to be the director of hockey operations at Sheffield. And as his player coach, coming from London, is Dennis Maxwell. That's a hell of a signing.
It is. Dave Whistle is the kind of coach who's really, you know, he's too good to not be involved in hockey at some in some way. Mm-hmm. With Sheffield changing their coach sort of, you know, fairly well into the season we are now, it really, you know, they had to get someone who knew British hockey. You couldn't have brought someone in who maybe didn't know the style, the referees, the rules, you know, the way the game's played here. So I think, you know, it's a very good signing for Sheffield. The guy's a winner. Obviously, as you mentioned, he won the league in playoffs with ourselves. He won the league with Bracknell. And he produced some competitive Cardiff sides without maybe getting the final bit of luck that helps you, you know, take you from the top to become the champions.
Wiss definitely has a presence in the league. I know that in an interview on Sunday night with Nigel Ringland, that Dave Sims said Wiss is the type of guy who, in hockey circles, if he walked into the room, you knew he was there. He's definitely, as you say, he's definitely a winner. He's up there with Blazer as being probably one of the best coaches in the league. But as my question is, what exactly is head of hockey operations?
I think he'll probably be more involved on the recruitment and player side of things. I would imagine.
Leave Maxi to run the bench.
And leave Max. Well, I think he'll be an extra pair of eyes on the bench. I think they'd probably combine quite well in coach, you know, in training, and it gives sort of Dennis Maxwell more of a chance to go out and play without having to concentrate maybe as much on what else is going on around, you know, around him on the ice. It gives sort of the extra pair of eyes on the bench, which I think, you know, it's something that you and I have touched upon before in Belfast with Ed Courtney. And sort of the difference between a player and coach, I think it is important to have someone on the bench.
Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how this works. Maxi haven't come from his position as head coach in London, coming here, and I'd like to see how the two of these boys link up. It could work, but I hope it doesn't, personally. Because as Rick has said, Sheffield could be the sleeping giant. And if it does work out and they do fight their way to the top, we could be in serious trouble at the top of the league. I know that a lot of Sheffield fans I've spoke with have high hopes, and I've done my best to try to put them down. But I do have my doubts.
Well, again, you know, Sheffield, as we've said before many times, have a big tradition of being a winning side. They're always there and thereabouts. So even last season, when they had quite a poor league campaign, when it came to the playoffs, you know, they came to Belfast and beat us in Sheffield. They got to the Final Four. We finished second in the league, had a very strong season in the league, and didn't get to the playoffs. So they're a side that's always there and thereabouts. You know, no matter what, and certainly for many years they've always been up there. Certainly since the Belfast Giants have come into the league.
Mm-hmm. This says something more. Something we've been saying every week, and you know, it's not something we can't get past. The Steelers are a very successful side, but do you think, as you say, they've been lacking in passion the last couple of weeks in their game? And I know from the game that we saw in Sheffield and the game you saw last week at the Odyssey Arena, they still lack that passion. Can Wiss and Maxi reinstill it and make them want to play again?
The team have a lot of very skilled players. I think one thing that they did miss, and as again, it's something we've touched upon before, in this league, this league's quite a tough league, and something the Steelers didn't really have was a guy, you know, who could stick up for the rest of the team. And now they've got two, in Dennis Maxwell and Jason Robinson. Again, and Dave Whistle, you know, he's the kind of guy who, as we've said before, he has a presence, but he can also inspire people. You know, he can make a team, really. He can bring a lot of individuals together, and he can really make them into a solid team. I think it'll be interesting to see how things develop over there in Sheffield.
On a personal note, I have a bad feeling. You know what I mean? I really think that they're going to climb. And I think that, personally, I'd like to think that we can hold it. But we'll have to see how we do next Sunday and games after that. Yeah, the show's been a bit of a downer so far with London, and then of course with Wiss and Maxi. Maybe not getting most people down, getting me down, but maybe not getting most people down. But there's been a bit of good news in the league this week, from my perspective, anyway.
Yeah, certainly from the perspective of the hockey fan, anyway.
Bye bye, Mayor.
Yes. fortunately or unfortunately, depending which way you want to look at things, he has been, well, it seems to be a mutual thing again. He is parted company with the Newcastle Vipers.
Mm-hmm. The statement from the Vipers said that the 34-year-old utility player requested release following an opportunity to join the Canadian Fire Service. Now, I've heard that before, actually.
It seems to be, you know, the traditional hockey player's route. Owen McInerney of Cardiff a couple of years ago went back to Canada to join the fire service.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there's been a few others as well over the last few years.
Mm-hmm. So it comes from the big book of excuses? I don't know. Of course, I'm just speculating on that. But as everybody knows, I'm absolutely devastated. Mel was one of my favourite players ever to have played in the Elite Ice Hockey League. A man of skill, a man of talent. What shooting ability, what defensive capability, and he'd be a loss to the league, won't he, Aaron?
He certainly will, and I just hope that in the fire service his aim will be an awful lot better than it was as a hockey player.
Fire goes up, Mel picks up the hose, points, misses. That's really not going to go down well. Newcastle, in the meantime, have replaced Mel with another London player. The London players, as I say, they've been spread about the league now, and Cornish has come in.
Yep, seems to have had quite a good debut and picked up a goal and an assist in his first game against Edinburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, to be fair, he is a slightly better hockey player.
I'm actually just going to lay off on this as well. Sorry, yeah, go ahead.
I think probably he's a slightly better hockey player than Mel Engelstad and probably offers a bit more.
I think my granny's a better player, but go on.
I think Cornish will go in and play up front, and and Jason Weaver will move back on the defence. So it'll be interesting to see what difference that will make up there. Newcastle have been on quite a good run actually since the suspension of Mel Engelstad. So
well, there's a surprise. I think the Newcastle fans will be pleased to see Cornish, because I think their main loss with Mel is a loss of a clogger, is a loss of a good pair of fists, which undoubtedly Mel was, to give him his dues. That's what he was. He was a good pair of fists. But they've now replaced him with another good pair of fists.
Yeah, a good pair of fists who can actually score,
mm-hmm.
and has picked up a fair amount of points. And in fact, at the start of the season, was right at the top of the scoring charts,
mm-hmm.
With an early run of goals. So I'd say that's a good addition for them, or a good swap for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, in all fairness, we here at A View from the Bridge wish Mel Engelstad all the very best in his future career in the Canadian Fire Service.
He always gave his all when he was here, and despite maybe any shortcomings that certain people may have thought he had,
not me.
There was no doubting that he did put everything into it.
On Saturday night, we have a rescheduled game due to the loss of London and the London fixtures. We've been rescheduled to play the Bison in Basingstoke. This is the first chance we've actually had to talk about the Bison since we started the podcast, Aaron.
It is, yep. We've briefly touched upon them before with their goaltending changes. At the minute, their coach, I believe, is standing in as a temporary goalkeeper for them. And by all accounts, seems to have been doing a fairly decent job. Again, the Bison are down there with Edinburgh at the minute.
They seem to have struggled there since last season as well.
Yeah, they did last season, although last season they had an awful lot of success against ourselves.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, we just couldn't beat them until very late in the season. And of course, that was one of the things that maybe, you know, was one of the major factors in why we finished second in the league rather than maybe pushing on to be champions. It's a game, really, that we can't afford to be losing. We do need to pick up points against the teams that are lower in the league. But as we've said before, any away point is a big, you know, any away win's a big win. It's difficult to go into other teams' arenas or rinks in this league and pick up the 2 points.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Last season, the Bison were our, well, bogey team, if we put it like that. We always seem to have them. Coventry is renowned as one as well. But I'm personally yet to see the Bison play this season, so I can't really talk on how I feel they're doing. But I'd like to see the Bison, as with Edinburgh, I'd like to see all the teams doing well, but I really think that this should be a 2-pointer. straight off the bat.
I would hope so. Again, they've got some good forwards there. They've got Kirk Maltby, Doug Shepherd, who are capable on any night of picking up goals, and are both over the last couple of years have been, you know, towards the top of the scoring charts, even on a Bison side that struggled quite a bit. But I would hope that with our offense, with Basingstoke's net minding problems, if you can really call them that, and just really, you know, the general play of the Bison so far, that we could pick up the 2 points.
And then on Sunday night we travel to the Hallam FM Arena, and we have another game against the Steelers. That's 2 games in 8 days. As you've heard, we've talked about the Steelers and the fact that now Wiss and Maxi, and I'm wondering if they'll have more passion. Do you think they can breathe new life into the team?
As far as I'm aware, Dave Whistle won't be there for Sunday. Mm-hmm. Dennis Maxwell and Jason Robinson, however, will be. And of course, one thing that could maybe play into our hands is that they've lost Dan Seaman this week as well.
No jokes.
No jokes. He's parted company with the Steelers, and he was one of their top point scorers, and one of the guys who was, you know, who would always be capable of putting a puck into the net. Mm-hmm. You know, other than him,
Seaman. Sorry, you saying that Seaman's good at shooting at home?
Seaman's good at shooting anywhere. Dan Seaman is someone who's, over his time in Britain and elsewhere, has always been good at putting the puck in the net. So it'll be interesting to see if the others can pick up on that for him.
Of course, this game's actually the first away game that will be covered by Nigel and Wayne on www.belfastgiants.com. They'll be coming from the Hallam FM Arena. It'll be interesting to hear, first away game.
Yes, I would say it'll be something that a lot of Belfast fans will be very pleased with. It's something we've never really had before, other than occasionally, you know, in a big game. Whenever, you know, it's maybe meant something towards the end of the season, and one of the, maybe it's been in Nottingham or Sheffield, and the Nottingham or Sheffield guys have been covering it themselves. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to hear, you know, our own guys covering a game for us.
They call the game well. If you want to, like I say, if you want to tune in, it'll be on Sunday night. Staying with the guys, let's move on to the G Crew review. And at this point, I'll have what's now becoming a ceremonial opening of a beer. Thank you very much. And the G Crew review, and we've Aaron, you've sort of fallen off in your duties. And
yeah,
I'm very disappointed at that.
And so am I, to be perfectly honest. But
well,
you know.
So what I've had to do is I've had to enlist a more high profile reviewer, and they'll just play the clip.
Great to see the Giants playing so well after 8 days off.
I was a little bit distracted there, Wayne. What were you saying? I was watching the G Crew there. They were doing one of those dances, the Giants cheerleaders, and I apologise, I wasn't paying any attention whatsoever to what you were talking about there. I was a little bit distracted. There's a little problem with the ice at the moment that the officials are fixing. I'm just going to watch the cheerleaders. You can explain what's just happened.
Well, you young lads, you know, you're distracted by many things.
There's some high kicking action going on there, and not even from the players, which is slightly unusual, but repairs to the ice going on. 5:44 to go in this game. It's the Belfast Giants 5, the Sheffield Steelers 0. The game highlighted tonight.
And he's been missing for a number of weeks, and Nathan Craze has been following in, but it's nice to see him behind the bench, ready to play if he's called on.
Yeah, I'm sure, Wayne, whatever you were saying there was very informative, but once again, the G Crew doing some sort of country dancing here, some line dancing behind the goal, and Cotton Eye Joe being played, and well, they're waving their pom-poms in the air. You can tell this is a 5-0 game, ladies and gentlemen, and you can tell that there's stoppage going on at the moment as they're repairing a hole in the ice. The linesman down there at the moment. Actually, the cheerleaders have to work hard for their money here. This is a long stoppage, and they haven't stopped dancing through the last 2.5 minutes or so.
Ed Courtney having a good chat with Dan Seaman. And
of course, Nigel Ringland there, giving us our G Crew review. He's not bad at that, is he?
No, I think he's done that before, maybe.
Possibly. We'll have to get on him and see if we can make it a weekly feature, the G Crew review.
It'll be interesting to hear what he can come up with in Sheffield for the...
For their cheerleaders? Do they have cheerleaders?
I think they do. S Club, are they? Or?
I can't remember if they have cheerleaders or not. I know that in Newcastle they have what we christened the V Crew. I can't remember what their names was. And at the playoffs, they had the Comets.
Oh, the Comets were great. But they only danced when they were told to.
A bit of an in-joke there. And, yeah, well, I'll have to get on to Nigel and see if he can if he can keep up this these review of the of how the G Crew are getting on.
I'd say he'd be very happy to keep it up with the G Crew.
And we'll I say so. But I may have to take over myself when I come home over Christmas. And again, if any of the G Crew want to get in touch, you know, the number's here. You give me a call any time at all. And we'll be only too happy to accommodate you. That's being left in, by the
literally.
Way.
Literally.
That's being left in. I don't care. Because on that bombshell, I think we're going to have to close the show. But before we do, we've got a couple of comments from the emails and the rant line. First of all, in the emails, Patrick and Jane Boylan have contacted us from across the pond over in Chicago. We've got two listeners in Illinois tuning into the podcast on a regular basis. We just say hello to you guys. It's good to have listeners from in North America. It's good to hear, isn't it?
It is, yes. Hopefully we can tempt them across sometime to have a pint and enjoy the Giants.
Your band. that'll be a first. We've also got a comment coming from somebody who seems to be a regular contributor to this show, but we'll play the clip.
Hi, I don't feel sorry for Nottingham, that is all.
Of course, that comes from a comment that I made last week regarding the loss of Dan Tessier, and that I felt sorry for Nottingham. And one Belfast Giants fan, whose voice again sounds quite familiar, making known that he does not feel sorry for Nottingham. What do you think of that, Aaron?
Well, I agree with him, basically.
dear. Sorry to any Nottingham fans, but you make your bed, you lie in it, to be honest. I think with that, we'll end the show. Big thanks to Rick Strang for coming on the show.
Yep,
and
definitely. Thank you very much, Rick.
Giving us views. Maybe we'll get to chat to him again at some point. Remind you, the game's on live on Sunday night on www.belfastgiants.com. If you want to get in touch with the show, podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com. You should know this by now. Phone us at 0141 416 1296, or go on the website at kingdomofthegiants.com/podcast. We'll be back. Sorry, we have a late podcast this week due to, it was my fault really, wasn't it?
Well, it was partly mine as well. Yeah.
Enjoying the football down in Liverpool, but next week we hope that the podcast will be on time on a Thursday night. And once again, myself and Aaron will be back here to give you all the news, the views, and everything that's going on in with the Belfast Giants and the Elite Ice Hockey League. Thanks again, Aaron.
Thank you very much, Paddy.
And we'll see you next time on A View from the Bridge.